Greetings once again to you, my fellow man. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, your home for conservative talk on the web. This is the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do take the events of the week and focus them through the lens of original thought. I hope everyone out there had a delightful 4th of July weekend celebrating the founding of this great nation, perhaps the greatest nation in the history of the world. I had a really good time. We shot off some fireworks last night. Nothing spectacular, nothing that left the ground. But it was illegal, and so we had an awful lot of fun out in front of our house last night. And I do want to, I don't know how our fax number got out there, but we have been inundated, as I'm sure have been all media outlets across the broadcast, print, and internet media this week. We've had to deny several requests via fax for airtime from Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. Apparently, the Weekly Worldview is one of only four shows in all of media that they have not appeared on in this past week. And we have had to change our fax number so Messrs. Jackson and Sharpton would just leave us alone, for crying out loud. Tell you what, a couple of grave-robbing ghouls. See them everywhere, and it's just disturbing. But that's beside the point. This is the week in which we're all aglow in the celebration of the founding of this great nation. And in the spirit of just that, I want to start with the most monumental story of the week, perhaps the most influential and important story of your lifetime and mine, Dateline Denver, Colorado, from the Colorado Springs Gazette. Two anti-abortion groups, Colorado Right to Life and Personhood USA, submitted a new Personhood initiative to the Colorado Legislative Council this past week in hopes of getting a measure on the 2010 state ballot. You heard it here, well, not first, but you heard it here loudest, that's for sure. We're all excited about personhood here in Colorado. You'll remember back in 2008, over 500,000 free Americans voted to say, yes, the unborn child is a person. And while we didn't win the election, we have changed an awful lot of minds, and we are marching forward with personhood here in Colorado. I cannot wait to donate my time and my money to this effort because, as I say, it is the most important thing happening in the world as far as you and I are concerned in our day-to-day lives. So I want to encourage everyone out there to get involved. Let's take a look at the Gazette story. The Gazette, by the way, down in Colorado Springs, not necessarily the most friendly paper to those of us who advocate the personhood of all human beings from the earliest moments of biological development. Let's go back to the Gazette. Colorado voters, the Gazette tells us, they remind us that Colorado voters soundly defeated a similar measure, Amendment 48, in the 2008 election. But initiative sponsors say things will be different in 2010 because they will be better funded and better able to articulate their message and will introduce a measure that's more accurately worded. Now, I've got a quote here from Gualberto Garcia Jones. He's the director of Personhood Colorado, which is an arm of the national Denver-based organization Personhood USA. Gualberto says, quote, "The fact that we got over 500,000 Coloradans to vote for personhood in 08 shows us that people care about ensuring that all humans are protected under law." That's right. Now, this year, rather than defining a person as any human being from the moment of fertilization, as we did in 2008, the new initiative will establish personhood in, quote, "every human being from the beginning of the biological development of that human being." Gualberto Garcia Jones tells us that the change in the wording doesn't leave any loopholes to artificial forms of reproduction, such as cloning. Now, the abortion rights activists, our enemies, our adversaries, well, they say they're not really worried about this at all. They feel that the measure was soundly defeated last year in Colorado, and even though now, if I'm not mistaken, at last report, there were 16 states actively pursuing some form of personhood legislation or ballot initiative, but the abortion rights folks are not concerned in the least. Let's check in with the National Advocates for Pregnant Women in New York. Yeah, the National Advocates for Pregnant Women. That's an organization whose title would indicate that they advocate for pregnant women. Maybe they're for clean hospitals. Maybe they're for lower cost health care for pregnant women. But if you go to their website, National Advocates for Pregnant Women, you'll find out they're all about one thing, killing unborn women. According to the Gazette, abortion rights activists weren't overly concerned about the new campaign. In a quote from Lynn Paltrow, who is the executive director of said National Advocates for Pregnant Women out in New York, she says, quote, "It gives us another opportunity to explain how personhood amendments threaten all pregnant women, including those going to term." Interesting, Ms. Paltrow. She's not worried. She gives a quote, and believe me, they'll be bringing in the big dollars in Colorado and a number of other states as they don't worry right up until Election Day, and they pour millions of dollars to promote their message of lies and deception that tells women that pregnancy is something you may or may not choose to go through with. Child rearing is really just an option, and it's an option that you can opt out of if you so choose. After all, it's your right. It's your sacred holy right, at least in their religion. But they're not worried. Let's see, we have another organization here that's quoted, another unconcerned abortion advocacy organization. J.C. Montoya, head of the Colorado Organization for Latina Opportunity and Reproductive Rights in Denver, she said that as the 2008 vote showed, Coloradans are, quote, uncomfortable with the government and strangers making personal decisions for families. And I would just say to J.C. Montoya, I appreciate the fact that you're not concerned with the personhood movement, but how is defining a person as a person, how is that making a private decision for a family? This is a public decision regarding the law. And we welcome and relish the challenge of taking on such persons as Lynn Paltrow at the National Advocates for Pregnant Women, J.C. Montoya, all the folks over at Planned Parenthood and NARAL, and whatever other satanic groups out there choose not to be concerned with our progress on the personhood front. Congratulations to the folks at Personhood USA, Keith Mason, all the folks out there, because they really were the impetus for making this happen yet again here in 2010. We applaud their efforts, and we look forward to the battle. You can go to personhoodusa.com and make a healthy donation. Join me in donating your money and your time to personhood, because it's going to be something that's going to be looked back on in 100 years in a similar light to the abolitionist movement. That eventually succeeded. I know there was a massive civil war and 600,000 people were slaughtered like dogs, but the pro-life Americans who support personhood, we're hoping to avoid bloodshed. We're hoping to stem the tide of the flow of innocent blood. And we honor everyone who works for the peaceful change of governmental and social policies that end the legalized killing of all innocent persons. All right, way to go, Personhood USA, Colorado Right to Life. Awesome, American Right to Life, all those guys. Good work. All right, now we're going to continue into the culture file, and it's not nearly as sunny as we delve in to the culture file this week, but I have, this is a really interesting story from the American Family News Network via WorldNet Daily. Get a load of this. A conservative black pastor and former NFL linebacker says he's highly offended that President Obama would compare the plight of homosexuals to that of blacks during the civil rights era. Yeah. Last week, President Obama, according to the story, told a gathering of homosexuals at the White House. That's kind of not really cool to think about. A gathering of homosexuals at the White House? Anyway, let's move on. He told this gathering of deviants that he is aware that many of them, quote, don't believe progress has come fast enough, unquote, and compared their struggles to those of blacks during the civil rights movement. Well, Ken Hutcherson, the senior pastor of Antioch Bible Church in Kirkland, Washington, out in Washington State, says that the comments are especially disturbing from an individual who is supposed to be familiar with the, quote, black experience. Now, Mr. Hutchison makes a number of comments here about Barry Ho's blackness that I'm just going to leave aside, because me, being just a white-bred Irish boy, I don't know much about the black experience, and I don't know how to gauge Barry Ho or his MO or any of those folks as to their black experience or blackness or any of that. But what I want to hit on is Hutcherson's comments. This is great stuff. I like this guy. Antioch Bible Church must be a pretty solid church out in Kirkland. Listen to this. Hutcherson expressed disgust with evangelicals who still support President Obama despite his promotion of policies that are at odds with Scripture. He says such individuals are part of the evangelifish movement in America. Man, I want to steal that from the right Reverend Hutchison. The evangelifish movement. He says a person, now listen to Pastor Hutchison says, quote, "A person can be as black as a piece of coal, but if he goes against God's biblical views, I would not support him. I would not endorse him. I would not even give a smile in his direction so people could even think that I endorse him. Because God is my God, the Bible is my playbook, and I run it the way it is written." Praise the Lord. Can I get an amen? All right, Reverend Hutchison. All right. Let's see. During his speech, during Barry Ho's speech to the assembled deviants last week, Obama suggested that Christians like Hutcherson, who oppose homosexuality on biblical grounds, hold to, quote, worn arguments and old attitudes. Okay, and that's going to bring us to our scripture, but we're going to get to that a little bit later in the broadcast, because we've got to delve into the culture file as we document the cultural meltdown that is happening here in America. And a fine example of that, both physically and spiritually and culturally, is one Michael Jackson. Now, Dateline Los Angeles from the Associated Press, the powerful sedative Diprivan was found in Michael Jackson's home. This is an anesthetic that's typically used in operating rooms to induce unconsciousness. It's also known as propofol, for all of you out there who are familiar with the lingo. It's administered intravenously, and it is very unusual to find it in a private home. Well, Michael Jackson was nothing if not unusual, and apparently, you've heard me make comments about certain politicians and members of the media who I believe are under the influence of mind-altering drugs all the time. And I think Michael Jackson is just one extreme example of just what I was talking about. Cultural icons who are basically out of their minds on prescription and mind-altering psychotropic drugs. Michael Jackson was the pinnacle of all that. And the media, over this past 10 days, to me, is an example of the biblical admonition against worshiping an idol created by your own hands, because the media has been worshiping the idol that they created. Yes. They and the public that they influence, they fashioned for themselves an idol. Michael Jackson. And this past 10 days, since the unfortunate expiration of one Michael Jackson, this is all part of the worship ritual. It's 10 days of worship services that have been going on. I'm sure this is not unlike what happened back in the days of the Egyptian pharaohs. Whenever they passed from the scene, I'm sure that the entire culture was forced to stop everything they were doing and focus on the worship of the idol that had been created. Michael Jackson is the idol. And just like in Bible times, the idol was a big, dumb creation of the people, and it basically fell over. The idol fell over and collapsed. But the people continue to worship, as if the idol could speak, as if the idol could be resurrected and come back to life and somehow fulfill their desire to have some idol other to have something to worship other than the true God, the creator God, the judge of all the world. Instead, the media and the public that they influence, they want to worship an idol that they created with their own hands. And that's exactly what's been going on for the past 10 days. And frankly, I am looking forward to moving on. It is the Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney, and we're moving on from the worship service for one Michael Jackson. We did manage to avoid the, well, what seems to be an obligation to put Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton on the show. And so we want to move on, but we can't. We can't because why? Well, because Colin Cancer Powell has reared his ugly head again. Dateline Washington, D.C. from the Associated Press. Colin Cancer Powell, that's right, former general, former Secretary of Defense, and wasn't he Secretary of something else? Was he Secretary of State? I don't know. Anyway, Colin Powell, you know who he is. He says Michael Jackson had controversy in his life, but in death, his art should be celebrated. Let's get the quote from Colin Cancer Powell. He says, quote, yes, there were some challenges in his life, he told CNN. Yes, there was a great deal of controversy about him, but now he's passed on. Let's celebrate his art. And this is, Colin Cancer Powell is at the pinnacle of the secular power structure. He's the type of guy you can't really say anything bad about. Mostly because of the color of his skin, but also because he's a flaming liberal. But I want to just remind Cancer that Michael Jackson, in the end, and it'll all come out, I'm sure, and it'll be even seedier and more disgusting than you might even imagine. He basically popped pills, he stiffed store owners, he abused young boys, and he danced while grabbing his crotch. So I guess that's the art to which Cancer is referring. The crotch grabbing, the hip thrusting, all of that. That's the art that Colin Cancer Powell says that we should honor at this point. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you have no doubt heard it said that one should never speak ill of the dead. And I say that, you know, if you're the type of person who spoke ill of someone regularly while they were alive, then you'd be a hypocrite to change now. And so I was never a big Michael Jackson fan. First of all, he was a pop star, and he didn't play guitar. So in the early 80s, when I was in junior high school and high school, when Michael Jackson rose to fame, I didn't like him just because he was just another queer with a synthesizer who didn't even know how to play guitar. How did he have a number one record, for crying out loud? But besides all that, the guy just gave me the creeps, okay? And so, and after he was fairly convincingly accused of abusing young boys, just solidified my contempt and distaste for Michael Jackson. And just because he has passed from the scene, I am certainly not going to change my opinion, nor am I going to shy away from my comments while Mr. Jackson was alive. He was a sick, disgusting, apparently a drug-addled old homosexual who didn't pay his bills. And who knows what he did to those kids of his? He had three kids, if he's to be believed, and I don't really know about all that. But anyway, let's move on from the worship services for the idol of the moment, and we'll move on to the state of higher education in America today. From the University of impugn the University of Colorado. What a fine institution that is. If you're interested in learning how to grow really top quality marijuana and how to use a beer bong, I highly recommend the University of Colorado. Please don't confuse them with the University of Northern Colorado, which, according to the Colorado Springs Gazette, had hired a theater arts professor, a gentleman named Raymond Vance Fulkerson. They hired him back in 1989 to be their theater professor. Well, the 63-year-old theater professor was arrested this past week on suspicion of setting up a hidden camera in a bathroom in his house. Maybe he was just trying to honor the art of Michael Jackson. I don't know. He's a university professor, and he's involved in theater, where Mr. Jackson apparently exercises a considerable degree of influence on the psyche of those who are teaching our young people how to be movie stars. Have you noticed this with the young folks these days when you ask them what they want to be? I would like to be in theater and in video and in, you know, nobody wants to be a plumber. Nobody wants to be an electrician, something that's valid and worthwhile. These young people want to be actors and actresses. But maybe it has always been such, and I just haven't been paying attention because, frankly, I don't really care what people under the age of 25 have to say. I really don't care. But I just want to make a note to parents and teens out there. For you teenagers, even though I don't care what you have to say, please don't take that the wrong way. But if you're thinking about college, be aware. Beware even of professors at all levels, whether they're in any of the liberal arts department, for sure. But in the theater department particularly, I mean, just beware of those that practice toilet theater or whatever you would call this, you know. I mean, I would guess that a good percentage of liberal arts professors and virtually anyone associated with any collegiate theater program should at the very least be viewed with suspicion, okay? So I understand that many of you youngsters out there have to attend university because you want to get a degree, and that's respectable, I suppose. But just beware, okay? This guy was employed out there for 20 years, for crying out loud, and he's got a camera in his bathroom. Okay. I don't know, maybe... Maybe he was doing auditions. I don't know what was going on there, but... just a snapshot of higher education in America today. And now we end the culture file in Columbus, Ohio, from the Associated Press, a story regarding the Mennonites. Now, when I think of Mennonites, I think of people with the horse-drawn carriages and the Little House on the Prairie bonnets. But apparently things have changed. Dateline Columbus, Ohio, from the Associated Press. In a quiet act of defiance, gay and lesbian Mennonites, dressed in bright pink, gathered outside the church's official convention in Columbus this past week and criticized its leaders for trying to push them out. Now, first of all, from the Associated Press, they called dressing in bright pink and gathering outside the church's convention to protest, they call that a quiet act of defiance. If there's one thing you can say about the queers who are advocating equality and demanding marriage and demanding all of the benefits that accrue to normal people in normal life. One thing you can say about them is they're not quiet. So I don't know why the AP chose to editorialize here and call this a quiet act of defiance. Whenever me and my friends go to a church that supports homosexuality and abortion and we protest that church, we're not quiet either. We're quite boisterous. Now, the Mennonite Church, according to the AP, does not recognize openly gay people as official members. Now, that doesn't mean openly happy people. The Mennonites love happy people. It's homosexual people that they apparently do not recognize as official members. Now, the gay rights movement among Mennonites, according to the Associated Press, now there's a statement right there. When you read that, you think surely the end is near. There's a gay rights movement among Mennonites, for crying out loud? I mean, are the Visigoths going to descend and the Vandals, and are they going to sack Washington? Is it all over? I mean, that's a sign of the times if there ever was one. The gay rights movement among Mennonites, which for years lacked a visible presence within the church, gained steam several months ago when nearly 1,400 ministers signed a letter calling on the church to allow homosexual members to worship with everyone else. They say that the definition of what's acceptable and what's not is murky at best. In some congregations, gay Mennonites are welcome as long as they remain celibate. In others, they're shunned. Well, I don't know if there's any confusion among the Mennonites about what's acceptable and what's not. I think that there's fairly conclusive direction from the scriptures on this. And if I'm not mistaken, the Mennonites do adhere to scripture from what I understand. It's not murky at all. We're going to do our verses. This brings us into our verses. Warning, 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 and danger. Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead for those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity. We know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would not tolerate anyone who would dare read a Bible verse in public. So this notice gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. We'll start in the Old Testament, Leviticus 18:22. You shall not lie with a man as with a woman. It is an abomination. That's not very murky, but it is Old Testament. So let's go to Romans, the first chapter and the 26th verse. For this reason, God gave them up to vile passions, for even their women exchanged the natural use for what is against nature. Likewise, also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust for one another, men with men, committing what is shameful, and receiving in themselves the penalty of their error, which was due. Now, nothing murky there, right? Maybe the Mennonites have murked things up as they've allowed the deviants and the homosexuals to pour out of the Mennonite closet, but there's nothing murky in the scriptures. Nothing murky at all. Is there anything else from this story that we want to do? Let's see. Congregations in the Mennonite church are disciplined, and in rare cases, they're kicked out altogether for allowing non-celibate gay members to worship with them. Pastors who perform civil unions for gay couples run the risk of losing their ordination. Well, praise the Lord, there's some good news. I guess there's some Mennonites, even though they might have parted ways with the whole buggy whip crowd, at least they still know that homosexuality belongs in the closet, for crying out loud. You don't need to have folks openly worshiping in your congregation as homosexuals, pronouncing and claiming and praising the fact that they're homosexuals there in your church. All right, that's enough of that, because that's just frankly disturbing. Let's dive into the politics file, which is very thick this week. We're going to go back to America's black mayor, and I'm allowed to say that because this guy that I'm about to talk about is black, and apparently since Barry Ho was elected, if someone is black and they've attained any office, we're all obligated to note that they're black and they are, whatever, the first black dog catcher in Denver. It seems like an obligation. So I call Marion Barry America's first black mayor. And maybe he wasn't the first chronologically, but certainly he's the first in the hearts and minds of all Americans. The United States Park Police, according to the Associated Press, said Marion Barry, who's a current black D.C. council member, was arrested Saturday in Washington after a woman flagged down an officer and complained that Barry was stalking her. Yeah, he was stalking a woman in the middle of the night, and the police arrested him, and apparently he was released on bail. And, I can picture this, the woman running down the street saying, "I don't have no cocaine, I don't have no cocaine, leave me alone." And Barry just wouldn't give it up. Anyway, you'll remember that Barry served four terms as the mayor of Washington, D.C., and during his third term, he was videotaped in 1990 smoking crack in a hotel room. During an FBI sting, he served 6 months in prison and then promptly regained the mayor's office there in Washington, D.C., making him truly America's first black mayor. Anyway, this is a perfect setup for the politics file this week because... In just a few lines, this story accurately caricatures all that's wrong with politics and politicians and the justice system in America today. This is it, in a nutshell, America, circa 2009, stand by for the Visigoths. Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney. We are hip deep in the politics file. Somebody bring a garden hose, for crying out loud. Dateline San Francisco, California, from the Associated Press. A federal judge in San Francisco said a lawsuit seeking to overturn California's same-sex marriage ban will likely one day reach the U.S. Supreme Court. One day. You know, with these judges, I'm surprised it hasn't reached the Supreme Court in one day. U.S. District Chief Judge Vaughn Walker. He says, quote, "I'm reasonably sure that given the personalities in this courtroom, this case is only touching down in this court and will have a life after this court. What happens here is in many ways a prelude to what happens later." The judge, that's Chief Judge Vaughn Walker, was named to the bench by President George Herbert Walker Bush. Which one is that? That's the first one. George Herbert, he's been asked to strike down Proposition 8 as a violation of the U.S. Constitution's guarantee of due process and equal protection. The November ballot initiative, Prop 8, out in California, supplanted a California Supreme Court ruling that had legalized same-sex marriages, but the state high court upheld that Proposition 8 was a valid exercise of the electorate's power to amend the California Constitution. The case, this particular case, has generated much attention because it was brought on behalf of two unmarried same-sex couples by former U.S. Solicitor General Theodore Olson and veteran trial lawyer David Boyce. You'll remember these are the two attorneys who represented opposing sides in the disputed 2000 presidential election tally. You remember all that? These guys represented the opposite sides of the Bush versus Gore back in 2000. And now they're teamed up to promote deviant, destructive behavior. Wow. Talk about first kill all the lawyers. I mean, now I mean that rhetorically, of course. I mean that figuratively, but if there ever was a couple of guys who lived out the true meaning of that creed, it's these two fellows. Let's see, did Judge Walker have anything else to say here? He wants to put the case on an accelerated timetable because it involves serious civil rights issues. Yeah, right. Yeah, it involves the homosexual lobby, which seems to be the most powerful lobby since the Roman army. Well, I mean, the Roman army before it was overrun by queers and defeated by the Visigoths and the Vandals. All staunchly heterosexual at the time, I'm sure. Moving on in the politics file, Joe Biden rears his ugly head again. Vice President Joe Biden told the Iraqi leaders this week that the path to a secure peace lies in uniting ethnic and sectarian groups, and he said that the U.S. might disengage from their country if it reverts to sustained violence. That's just great, Joe. So if there's violence, we might just take our toys and go home, says Joe. Obama sent Biden to Iraq to reaffirm the U.S. commitment to help the country. Yeah, and also just to get him as far away as humanly possible. Yeah, I can see the memo. Please send Joe somewhere where there are a lot of improvised explosive devices. Anyway, I don't want to imply anything there. What else do we have? Biden participated in a naturalization ceremony in which some 200 U.S. troops from 59 countries were sworn in as American citizens. And there's a quote from him. It says, quote, "As corny as it sounds, damn, I'm proud to be an American," unquote. That's Joe Biden, the Vice President of the United States. Joe, why would it be corny to say I'm proud to be an American? I'm not getting it, Joe. Did they stitch those hair plugs to your frontal lobe? For crying out loud. What a disaster this guy is. Dateline Columbus, Ohio. Several states are facing the prospect of government shutdowns and program cuts as they entered the first weekend of the fiscal year and the July 4th holiday without budgets in place. Yeah, it seems this 4th of July, we're celebrating the people's freedom to squander their neighbor's money via the government till. That's what we're celebrating, or at least that's what we're witnessing. Certainly we're not celebrating that here at the McBurney household, the McBurney compound here. According to the AP, the sputtering economy has created an across-the-board drop in tax collections. Taxes ranging from sales tax, personal income tax, property tax, they're all down. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger declared a fiscal emergency and ordered state officials, state offices to be closed 3 days a month to save money as state officials began paying bills with IOUs last week in California. You know, I think it's fitting that the Arnold is the poster boy for the bankrupt state since he's the prototypical modern Republican. It's beautiful. You know, he talks a good game, even looks conservative. But upon closer inspection, he's just an oversized empty suit who's generally more interested in good press than good governance. The governator, indeed. Terminator. He's terminating California, terminating the Republican Party. But we'll move on from Mr. Schwarzenegger to, let's see, what's happening down in Honduras? An update here. Washington, the Obama administration said Wednesday that it has suspended joint military operations with Honduras to protest a coup that forced socialist President Manuel Zelaya into exile. Yep, the socialist Zelaya has thanked the Barry Ho administration for supporting his unconditional return to power. The Obama administration is still studying whether the forced removal of Zelaya was a military coup in a legal sense that would trigger a cutoff or suspension of American financial assistance. Financial assistance? Wait a second. How can we afford financial assistance to Honduras? California's paying their bills with IOUs, for crying out loud. I thought we were broke. Anyway, I love this, that the Obama administration is studying whether the removal of Zelaya was a military coup. If I'm not mistaken, he was taken by a bunch of military guys, thrown into a military truck. He had a military rifle stuffed in his face, and he was escorted out of the country. I don't know how much study is involved, but I mean, there must be a lot of patronage jobs that Obama's trying to fill, because one need not study this too much to realize that, yes, indeed, it was a military coup, in a legal sense, in every sense of the word. I mean, you could ask, why don't you ask Mr. Zelaya about that rifle that was pointed down his throat? Seemed like a military coup from where I was sitting, but then again, I'm just your average guy. I don't really know the specific definition of a military coup. Let's see. The politics file is really thick this week. Al Franken is headed for the United States Senate. We have a dateline from St. Paul, Minnesota, from the Associated Press. Al Franken arrives in Washington next week. That's if his head doesn't just explode. Because, I mean, with this guy, anything could happen. He could disappear and just go to an island somewhere. Or he could show up in Washington and do his best to continue the destruction of Western civilization. It's just hard to say with Al. Now, he won by 312 votes in a bogus, phony, fake election that is the equivalent of what happened in Tehran over the past few weeks. Let's see. Al Franken talks at length about holding down health costs by making sure people have access to nutritious food, places to exercise, and havens from violence. Man. I feel like a Roman whenever Caligula ascended to the throne. You know, they just had to sit there and look at each other and say, you know, surely the end is near, you know? I mean, it's been a good run, but, man, do you see the people we're putting into office these days? I mean, we got to be nearing the end. You know, we need to have some food and water on hand because things are going to collapse fairly quickly. So I find it interesting that that Mr. Franken thinks people need havens from violence. That should be America. That should be any town USA should be a haven from violence. But Mr. Franken, not unlike many politicians, his equal, he's okay with a certain level of violence, a certain level of shedding of innocent blood. He's okay with that. He just wants there to be havens from that, mostly for his political donors and members of his immediate family, I think. Anyway, Al Franken is a United States senator. Just let that bounce around inside your head for a few minutes as you stock up on gas masks, canned goods, and bottled water. Oh, and ammunition. Okay, let's see. Governor Palin is in the news this week. The National Society of Newspaper Columnists, according to the Associated Press, chose Alaska Governor Sarah Palin as the winner of its annual Sitting Duck Award, a tongue-in-cheek honor that pokes fun at the most ridiculed newsmakers in the United States. Palin beat out Democrat Rod Blagojevich in the voting. the AP tells us there is no physical award to go with the sitting duck title. Her award, apparently, ladies and gentlemen, is to get out of politics. So she resigns from the governorship. I hope that she saw the Democrats for what they were, vicious attackers, killers, and thieves, and that she saw the Republicans for what they are, a more spineless version of the Democrats. I don't know what she plans to do, but I hope she's planning to focus on raising her kids and supporting her husband in whatever it is he does for a living. He repairs snow machines, or I don't know, he hunts for abominable snowmen. I'm not sure what he does, but hopefully she's going to support him in what he does, because all of us need the support of a loyal wife. A man who has found a wife has found a good thing. And so hopefully Governor Palin, I think she's got some little kids still, you know. I was never a big fan of hers just because she got little kids at home and she's got a full-time job, and that just, you know, I don't necessarily think that's the best situation, okay, for a young lady. All right. Let's see. Sonia Sotomayor rears her ugly head in the news. She was apparently an outside advisor to the Puerto Rican Legal Defense and Education Fund. And apparently there are some papers and some positions they took. They're radical socialist, communist, child-killing thief. Just the lowest form of political life. They call themselves a Puerto Rican civil rights group. Well, apparently there are a bunch of papers that are just so radical that, you know, they make Bill Ayers blush. That she was a part of putting together some position papers and helping this organization. And the Republicans are threatening to battle over these papers. They want these papers released. But the Associated Press reminds us, the battle over the papers isn't likely to damage Sotomayor's chances for confirmation, since Democrats have more than enough votes in favor of President Barry Ho's first high court nominee, and Republicans have shown little appetite for trying to block her. Which I don't understand. On Monday, the Supreme Court reversed a ruling that Sotomayor endorsed as an appeals court judge. She got overturned. Isn't that supposed to be embarrassing? In that treacherous and dubious and nebulous line of work, being a federal appeals court judge, whatever that entails, isn't that supposed to be a sign of failure? Oh, I forgot. Nobody fails anymore. Nobody gets fired. Oh, well, your ruling got overturned. It was laughed out of the courtroom, but let's put you on the Supreme Court. Anyway, so the fact that she got overturned, that doesn't matter to Republicans. None of this matters to Republicans. It's time for the Republican Party to just disband. Get out of politics. Get on the heels of Sarah Palin. Maybe Sarah Palin is a harbinger of things to come. Maybe the entire Republican infrastructure will just get out. Go on vacation. All you Republicans who've been ensconced in power for the last 30 years, just get out of here and focus on what you're good at. Playing golf, cheating on your wives, all of that. Surely the end is near for the Republican Party. Let's see. Oh, here we go. Now here's a name that folks have forgotten about. Congressman William Jefferson. Does anyone remember that name? Yep. Dateline Alexandria, Virginia, from the Associated Press. Prosecutors are playing audio tapes last week of former Louisiana Congressman William Jefferson talking with a woman about business deals he is accused of brokering in exchange for bribes. Let's see. Prosecutors say that businesswoman Lori Modi in 2005 agreed to wear a wire, and federal agents eventually videotaped her giving Jefferson a suitcase stuffed with $100,000 in cash. He's accused of receiving more than $400,000 in bribes for using his influence to broker business deals in Africa. Folks, it's a wonder that neither politicians nor common criminals fear prosecution in this country anymore. I mean, 4 years ago, prosecutors had videotapes and a suitcase full of cash. We're sitting here 4 years later, and Congressman William Jefferson has not been convicted. I mean, please, people. Could we get anything done around here? As we cruise into the final segment of the Weekly Worldview, we're almost finished with the politics file from the Wall Street Journal. In Washington, D.C., congressional spending on overseas travel is up almost tenfold since 1995 and has nearly tripled since 2001, according to the Wall Street Journal analysis of 60,000 travel records. Hundreds of lawmakers traveled overseas in 2008 at a cost of about $13 million. That's a 50% jump since Democrats took control of Congress 2 years ago. The Wall Street Journal tells us that the cost of so-called congressional delegations, known among lawmakers as coddles, has risen nearly 70% since 2005 when an influence-peddling scandal led to a ban on travel funded by lobbyists. You remember, right? The Republicans got in all that trouble for taking all those fancy trips on the private jets of lobbyists? So the Democrats had a natural solution. If we can't get the travel perks from lobbyists, we'll just raid the Treasury legally. And they passed legislation so they could do just that. And now they're doing it in front of God and everybody, and they're not even embarrassed. Case in point, in February of this year, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi led a delegation of Democratic lawmakers to visit U.S. troops in Afghanistan for 1 day. Before landing in Kabul, the 8 lawmakers and their entourage of spouses and aides spent 8 days in Italy, spending $57,000 on hotels and meals. And you know Nancy Pelosi didn't eat those meals. I think all she has for dinner is an Ativan, a Valtrax. Okay, no, I'm going to leave Nancy alone. She cuts her Ativan into two parts, and she mixes it with some Xanax. And then she follows it with a Valtrax. Now, you'll have to look those up so you can get that joke. But trust me, folks, it's funny. Now, this is not funny. We're moving into the domestic tranquility file. Dateline, Gaffney, South Carolina. A teenage girl shot while helping her father in her family's small furniture and appliance store died Saturday, becoming the 5th victim of a suspected serial killer terrorizing a small South Carolina community. Sheriff Bill Blanton said investigators believe the killings are linked and the search is on for a suspected male serial killer. Also murdered is an 83-year-old mother and her daughter, shot to death this past Wednesday. A 63-year-old peach farmer was also found dead in his home a week ago. That's Gaffney, South Carolina. That is not the south side of Chicago. Dateline Nashville, Tennessee, former NFL quarterback Steve McNair and a woman, not his wife, were found shot to death Saturday inside a residence in Nashville. We don't know yet, but it looks like a murder-suicide. Yet another murder-suicide. It just so happens that this guy happens to be famous, but this happens all the time. He was shot several times, including in the head. She was shot once in the head. The pistol was found underneath her body. 20-year-old Dave and Buster's waitress, not his wife. He arrived at her house somewhere around 1:30 in the morning. The Associated Press reports that they were dating. They were in a dating relationship, they say. Steve McNair is married with children. And the AP says that he was dating this woman. Okay, so there's just a little commentary on the state of journalism in America today. Dateline Simi Valley, California, from the domestic tranquility file. A gunman opened fire inside a busy dental office in an apparent domestic dispute, killing one woman, critically wounding three others. The woman killed had filed for divorce from the killer. Dateline San Diego, California. From the domestic tranquility file, the death of a gay sailor. And that's not a happy sailor. That's a homosexual sailor. Who was killed as he stood guard at Camp Pendleton does not appear to be a hate crime. Seaman August Provost of Houston, Texas, was found shot multiple times Tuesday in what investigators are calling a random act unrelated to the 29-year-old's sexuality. Folks, we've got a random murder shooting happening at the guard shack at Camp Pendleton in Oceanside, California, and you still can't get away from the homosexual angle. It's driving me crazy. How about solving the crime? A hate crime. I mean, obviously it didn't involve love or good vibrations or any of that. Let's solve the crime. You know, I mean, a homosexual gets killed and the homosexual advocates and the media automatically assume it's a hate crime. And they go into action to fight against anyone or anything that would harm a homosexual because he's a homosexual. Meanwhile, it's documented that the homosexual lifestyle kills homosexuals on average 30 years sooner than normal men. But you'll never hear a peep about how the homosexual community is consuming itself, killing itself. Homosexuality is a hate crime. It's a hate crime. It's a crime against God and against nature as God created it. There's your hate crime if you want to investigate something, all you advocates of death. We'll move into the war file quickly. The United States Marine Corps has been sent into action. The 2nd Marine Expeditionary Brigade was dispatched to Afghanistan by President Obama. About 4,000 troops are on a big push out there in Afghanistan. Brigadier General Lawrence D. Nicholson said his Marines will focus their efforts on protecting civilians from the Taliban, on restoring Afghan government services instead of mounting a series of hunt-and-kill missions against the insurgents. You know, I was in the Marine Corps, and it was a long, long time ago, but I don't remember protecting civilians and restoring government service. I don't recall that as part of my particular training, but I do remember the hunt-and-kill mission stuff. We did plenty of that kind of training. But maybe the Marine Corps has changed significantly since Barry Ho took office. I don't know. By the way, opium poppies grown in the territory that the Marines are operating in produce half the world's supply of opium and provide the Taliban with a valuable source of income. Huh. And, you know, since Michael Jackson was consuming more opiates than several third world countries combined, the Taliban is certainly concerned about the state of that market these days. Let's see, more than 7 years after the fall of the Taliban government, the radical Islamic militia remains a potent force across broad swaths of Afghanistan. The Barry Ho administration has made turning the war around a top priority. This current mission is the Marines' largest operation since the 2004 invasion of Fallujah. You all remember that, which was ugly, it was costly, but the Marines accomplished that mission. Of course, that was a series of hunt-and-kill missions, if I remember correctly, and they brought it off quite well. General Nicholson told his officers, "Our focus must be on getting this government back up on its feet. Our focus is not the Taliban." Oh, boy. This guy's a general in the United States Marine Corps? Let's see. The Marines are deploying what officers here say is the largest ever military civilian affairs contingent. A military civilian affairs contingent. That's great. It's attached to a combat brigade. About 50 Marines, mostly reservists with experience in local government, business management, and law enforcement. They're doing this instead of flooding the area of operations with cash, as some units did in Iraq. That turned out to be a mistake. I could have told them that was a mistake. Lieutenant Commander Curtis Lee said he intends to focus his resources on improving local government. He says, "We're not going to measure your success, Marines, by the number of times your ammunition is resupplied. Our success in this environment will be very much predicated on restraint." Restraint, I said. "You're going to drink lots of tea. You're going to eat lots of goat. Get to know the people. That's the reason why we're here." Well, I just hope that they, at least in an ancillary operation, kill some of the Taliban while they're there. Again, from the war file, two independent scientists say that North Korea may be using an old Soviet ballistic missile to boost a rocket capable of reaching the west coast of the United States. Meanwhile, All we hear about is Michael Jackson and the worship of the idol. The scientists say that if North Korea does have such a Russian-made ballistic missile in its arsenal, it could modify the rocket into a two-stage missile that could reach Seattle, Washington, or San Francisco, California. For all you folks up there in the hate, up in San Francisco, who love all the communists and you want to just go ohm with them. The design of a long-range missile tested by North Korea last April represents a very significant advance in rocket technology, according to MIT professor Ted Postel and Union of Concerned Scientists David Wright. They published their warning in the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. Using data and imagery from North Korea's April 4th launch, Postel and Wright calculated that the second stage of the North Korean rocket had the external dimensions, engine power, and key features of an SSN-6, a Soviet submarine-launched ballistic missile, first deployed in the year of our Lord, 1968. So there's one thing we can be thankful for, is that the nut up there in North Korea is operating with 40-year-old technology. That's probably the only thing that has stopped a city somewhere in the Pacific Rim from going up in flames. To the international file, New Delhi, India, from CNN. Three people have been killed in religious rioting in southern India between Muslims and Hindus. Widespread violence broke out in Mysore this past Thursday after somebody threw a dead pig into the compound of an under-construction mosque. Yeah, they heaved a dead pig into the compound there. Authorities have, for now, banned the assembly of five or more people on the streets in order to gain control of the situation. Why not ban tossing pigs? Why not ban Islam? I mean, isn't that what Pakistan was for crying out loud? To avoid all these religious clashes? Let's see here. I'm not going to have time to finish the international file because there's the music. Let's see. Dateline Madrid, Spain. Spanish police have arrested a man whom they suspect hired a contract killer to murder his boss in a desperate bid to avoid being laid off. The head of audiovisual services at the Barcelona International Convention Center contracted a Colombian hitman who shot and killed the director of the convention center back in February. The director had planned to lay off the arrested man as part of a restructuring project. Yeah. Now, how much does a hit job cost in Spain? Can't be cheap. They're on the euro, right? I mean, how much money does an AV director make, for crying out loud? I'm thinking, you know, hitmen from Colombia, they don't arrange financing. What possessed this man's mind to kill his boss over the possibility of being laid off? Now, is there a death penalty in Spain? Oh, no, there is not. Well, not official. But I guess there is an unofficial death penalty practiced by ordinary citizens who fear losing their jobs more than they fear the justice system in Spain. And that is just sad. Let's see here. All right. Dateline Istanbul. Turkish television station Kanal T hopes to launch a game show where spiritual guides from the four faiths seek to convert a group of non-believers. The prize for converts will be a pilgrimage to a holy site of their chosen religion, either Muslim, Christian, Jewish, Buddhist, so they can win a pilgrimage and, in the case of Christians, eternal life. Now, religious authorities in Muslim but secular Turkey are not amused by the twist on the popular reality game show format, and the Religious Affairs Directorate is refusing to provide an imam for the show. So the Muslims, typically, they don't want to show up where they're going to have to be faced with Christianity because that could just be embarrassing for them. Kanal T TV chief executive Sehan Soylu told Reuters, "We don't approve of anyone being an atheist. God is great. And it doesn't matter which religion you believe in. The important thing is to believe." Yeah. So a team of theologians are going to ensure that contestants are actually atheists. And they're not just seeking fame or a free holiday. You know, most theologians, they can't even figure out who God is. So I don't know how competent they're going to be at judging who an atheist is. You know, I always give everyone a benefit of the doubt. And I assume they're going to hell. And I share the gospel of Jesus Christ with them as often as I'm able to work up the nerve to do so. And I'm going to ask you to do the same as you go into this week. I want to thank all my friends at American Right to Life, KGov, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, way to go, all my brothers at Theology Online. And I want to say to you, This week, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.